Live Line on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry, bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding. Available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Live Line. 51551 is our text number. Obviously, people have been talking about the budget, but in the last few minutes, there are reports coming in that there is Israeli activity, Israeli and Hezbollah activity in or near where the Irish soldiers are based. Now, I've heard the Taoiseach, Minister for Defence and Foreign Affairs this morning on two different long interviews saying that the Irish soldiers are safe. They are bunkered down. Which must be very uncomfortable to say the least. They are bunkered down. I presume they're sleeping underground at this stage in cramped conditions. And the debate goes on. Well, should the Israelis have never, in fairness, deliberately attacked UNIFIL or UN forces? The Hezbollah have. They've killed Sean Rooney, as you know, a number of months ago. But they have no interest in attacking the UN forces. So what are we doing there? I heard one minister say that we're there as observers. But we're not. That was never our mandate when we were sent to Lebanon, south of the Litani River, all those decades ago. So I just wonder, what do Irish soldiers? I know we'll be talking to an Irish soldier later on, ex-soldier who believes, and he's from an army family, as a lot of soldiers are. He believes the Irish soldiers should stay there. And yet, I met someone this morning who said she's absolutely convinced they should be brought home. They, as it was said to me, they'd be better off bunkered down in McKee Barracks than bunkered down as the missiles, against which they've no protection, as the missiles fly overhead between the Israelis and the Hezbollah base in Lebanon. Paula Fay is in Israel and she's in Tel Aviv. Paula, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. How are you? What was it like last night?
Yeah, it was very scary, to be honest. I was working.
Yeah.
I was working at a wedding. I'm a makeup artist, so I was in Jerusalem.
Okay.
First we had, there was, sirens went off,
mm-hmm.
Around noon, because it was, an attack, missiles from Lebanon first, rockets from Lebanon.
Okay.
So then what happened was, with regards to the wedding, they wanted to, it was cancelled because they couldn't have like one, it's 300 people or whatever that couldn't be in a gathering.
Okay.
And it was in an outside area. So they had to, they cancelled the venue and then they relocated to another venue that had like a Mamad, which is like a safe room.
Okay.
So we moved to that location. And then there was a terrorist attack in Tel Aviv, which mm-hmm. seven people were yeah. murdered yeah. on their light rail. 20 people are wounded. Two people from the West Bank. Mm-hmm. They were from Hebron, came in, one with a rifle and one with a knife, and shot loads of people.
Mm-hmm.
And then, we got that news, and then we heard about the missiles coming.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and how do you have the system, Paula, on your mobile phone where there is a national alert?
Yeah, everyone gets a national alert, even if you're not, like, say, have got Wi-Fi or internet or that, it comes up. Everyone gets it.
Yeah.
And every place has every house has a Mamad, like a safe room.
A bunker, like, or whatever, yeah.
It's like a bunker that is, so everyone either goes to that, if not, like, the building, you have to go down to the basement.
Yeah.
So we were just told you go there and you don't come out.
Yeah.
So, for example, the people that were going, guests that were going to the wedding got stuck on the, if you can see the, there's footage of it, like that there was missiles coming down beside the highway, and they were stuck under a bridge, lying on the ground.
And what's it like in that? I presume the men, women, children, babies, adults, older people, people infirm, everyone has to go to that bunker.
Yeah. And what's, everyone has to go.
Okay, and what's in there? It must be very warm,
like,
for a start.
For example, in our, like, apartment, like, of course, I wasn't with my kids because I was working. So my husband is on his kids. And they were fine.
They're great.
They're strong. But I suppose, I live here now 5 years. Mm-hmm. And there's a very small Irish community at that. But I think what's kind of quite hurtful and sad is when we see, like, all the media. Like, I'm not Jewish, so it's not for me living here. It's not about, you know, I've people from, like, every country lives here. Christian, Muslim, Bais, every different Hindus, whatever. But it's the continuous thing about Israel is bombardment Israel on Lebanon. This, it's the attack. It's always the wording. And it's all the, when it's reported, it starts at Israel has done something, not what has happened before that.
But Paul, I completely take that on board, and that's what you were there. Just go back if you can. Take me into that bunker. What is it like when you're told, everyone is told, make for the bunker, and you don't know how long you're going to be there? What's in the bunker?
Well, for example, I was at a wedding, so it was like there's some people that are just frozen.
Yeah.
Just in
fear.
Complete fear.
Yeah.
There's some people just on their phones trying to check, like, if they can get any update.
From their
people trying to ring people, that, like, a lot of people were ringing guests that were on their way, that were stuck on the highway.
Yeah.
Children don't really get everyone goes, like, to, you know, give the children sweets or give them the iPad or something to then there's some people that just, like, show great defiance, and, like, for example, the wedding went ahead after that.
Okay.
You know, and would
anyone panic in the bunker, Paula?
Like, yeah, there was a few people crying and stuff. Yeah. But, and then there's people, it's like, what can you do?
Yeah,
we've been through this already.
Is there water? Is there food? Is there sanitary toilets?
Since October, we've been told leave water, snacks, and, like, have batteries, have, like, you know, candles, this kind of stuff in case, like, something happens.
Mm-hmm.
Tel Aviv is a bit more protected. Like, for example, the north is getting it all the time. You know?
And like, then, would you be aware, Paula, that there are... close to 400 Irish soldiers just inside the Lebanese border.
We do, but how has Hezbollah got past the line, the 1701 security line? And you can see there's footage. They've taken footage now that they have tunnels the whole way along the border. Mm. They had the exact same as what was they were going to do another October 7th. They found, like, you know, like, what can people do if UNIFIL are, like, not doing anything?
Mm-hmm.
What's the point? You know?
Well, I heard,
like, they're not. And Micheál Martin went over and congratulated them about what a great job they're doing, and Hezbollah started on the 8th of October. Israel had done nothing in Gaza. They didn't even go in. There was nothing. Everyone was still in shock from October 7th. And they're saying it's in a this is all in retaliation for the Palestinian people. And they're after killing
Iran.
That was killed was a Palestinian person in the West Bank last night.
And would people be conscious that next Monday is the first anniversary of October 7th, though every day has been a horror
100%.
Yeah.
There's protests every Saturday.
And Paula, would you be minded to leave with your children?
Yeah, of course. We left on last October. We left on the 18th of October. And we left for 6 weeks. But we were what do we do? You can live out of a bag. It's hard also because we don't know because we don't know
what's ahead. Stay with us, Paula, and I really appreciate you talking to us, especially what you're going through and what everyone is going through. And you're entitled to have your say as everyone else is. Drew Mikiel. Drew, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I know you're based here in Ireland at the minute, but have you been talking to your family in the Lebanon?
Yeah, I've been talking to family and friends, and just as you haven't introduced me, and I will stress that I come on here as someone who works in conflict and peace building across the region and in East Africa. So whilst I am Lebanese and there is a personal vested interest in understanding and lens of this conflict, and certainly with your caller, we can definitely empathize with the fear and the pain that conflict causes in its entirety. I must stress that that similar feelings are felt, of course, across the border.
I think, in fairness, Drew, I think everyone knows that. I think we all know that,
yeah.
And it's on every program from morning to. People are totally aware of. I want to hear of people's experience, like Paula, so people make their own judgment. I'm just very concerned about your family and indeed the Irish troops who are based in South Lebanon. And they're bunkered down at the minute. And what is the reality today? What is the reality today? And indeed for people living in the Lebanon, which has been attacked, as we know, by Israel, and then the whole Iranian thing yesterday, ratcheting up everything. Mm. What is it like for people living there, Drew?
Well, you've heard in the last call, and I would stress again that you hear the emotions of people, the fear for their daily life, the powerlessness to be able to go about your daily life, the fear that you may walk into the wrong neighborhood and be struck by a missile. Mm-hmm. I think it's particularly fearful that you're looking at one of the most densely populated cities in the Middle East, in Beirut, and the assassination of Hassan Nasrallah last week took down 6 apartment buildings. Some family members completely vaporized. And again, I was stressed that the last caller talked about the social mosaic of Israel being a place of lots of different religions. And Lebanon is also the same.
Yeah, of course.
In the southern border just last night, speaking with a friend, 2 churches were destroyed and a number of people were killed in a Christian village. Yeah. And really, it's we have to reject some of the anticipation that we want to create a binary out of this conflict and us and them, and really center the victims on all sides.
Yeah, here. Absolutely. It goes without saying. Nobody, I presume, well, you can't even say this at this stage, nobody wants conflict, but obviously some people do and some countries do. Paula, in fairness, Drew did acknowledge your genuine upset, but has the resolve of your friends, I know you work in the wedding business, makeup and all, but has the resolve of the people you know there strengthened or been diluted in the last few weeks?
And people are exhausted for the last year.
Are they? Okay.
Just exhausted.
Yeah, and you sound
emotionally, psychologically, like the Lebanese, like the Gazans, like the West Bank, as Drew said, it's not no one wants this, and in fairness, it's not I just want to be, like, here in Israel, it's probably the same in Lebanon. Same. Everyone wants to be left alone to go about their business. No one wants this.
Okay. No. Let me bring, say with us, Paula, please, and I really, Andrew, appreciate both your contributions. Alan White, Joe at RT.ie, 51551 is our text number. Alan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. Well, how are you today when you hear what's happening overnight? Now, we're trying to get, we got one report saying that there was fighting overhead, so to speak, where the Irish contingent are based in South Lebanon, near about half an hour from the Israeli border. But most of the villages, it seems, around there are controlled, as we discovered, to our awful cost with the death of Sean Rooney, are controlled by Hezbollah. When were you last out there, Alan?
Well, it's been a while ago now, Joe. It was the year 2000 I was out there last. But my son has been out there twice the recent couple of years, and I've spent seven tours of duty with UNIFIL myself,
wow.
You know.
Okay.
And it's tragic what's going on, but from a soldier point of view, I definitely wouldn't like to see the troops being withdrawn.
But Adam, what are they doing if they're bunkered down? Rightly so.
Well, that's an argument for another day, Joe.
Argument. Let's try and have it. Let's just try and enlighten listeners. If it said that the job, the first responders, i.e. police and our army, are way up there in terms of the great respect they have in this country, first responders, the normal description is they're normally running into a conflagration while all of us, the civilians, are running out. But here we have our Irish contingent who have bunkered down. This is the word, this is the government's description. They bunkered down. So what is their role? Apart from being a sitting target for an accidental, as it'll be branded.
Yeah, well, they're observation, Joe, and reporting, which if they weren't there, like, to be definitely a free-for-all. Like, every indiscriminate that's done out there, it's reported, and it's logged by UNIFIL, you know.
But
even though they're not patrolling, or we say on checkpoints or whatever, but they're still reporting and you know.
Well, if they're not patrolling and you say, I don't want to be hard here because I'm really conscious of everyone, and anyone who knows this programme knows my position on violence and death. I don't go in for whataboutery at one side, the other side. Every death is a waste of an incredibly potential long life of that individual. So we won't do any whataboutery today. But and I know you're not doing it. But if you're saying they're there as observers, but they're not. They're in bunker. What can you observe from a bunker?
Well, they're not. They won't. They'll all be in bunkers, Joe. I mean, someone has to be on duty on the post, like.
Yeah, but the Tánaiste said this morning that the Irish soldiers, he was talking to the Chief of Staff early this morning, they are all bunkered down. He didn't say 50 of them are out on patrol and they might be in danger. He said they are all bunkered down.
Well, they wouldn't all be bunkered down, Joe. No, someone would have to be on observation post. Like, the nature of any military post is that everyone just doesn't bunker down. Someone has to keep guard. I mean, you know, that in general sense, yes. But there are still people observing, reporting.
Okay. Well, in any of your tours, or indeed your son, talking to him, and thank you for your service and your family for your great service But Adam, did you ever have to bunker down, to use that phrase that's now become part of our lexicon?
Oh, bunker, groundhog, as it's known, Joe, is a regular occurrence in South Lebanon.
So what does it mean? Are there actual bunkers?
Yeah, they're bunkers. Yeah, they're shelters. They're in forced shelters that we'd say if there's incoming missiles or whatever, you get a groundhog call and you go to the bunker. But the duties still remain. The people that are up there still remain.
But just take me into that bunker. What is in that bunker?
Well, there's first aid, Joe, and there's seats and there's emergency rations. And
can you sleep?
You know,
is there room for everyone to sleep in it? To lie down?
No,
sorry.
No, there wouldn't be, no.
So you can't lie down in it?
Well, the bunkers I was in, Joe, you couldn't anyway.
Okay, well, I presume they haven't changed much. They overnighted in the bunker. They could be still in there. Hopefully they're safe. That's the main thing. So nobody could sleep unless you could sleep in a chair.
Things might have changed now, Joe. But you could sleep, but I mean, you get whatever sleep you could,
I wouldn't be comfortable at any stretch.
It wouldn't be, but soldiering isn't meant to be comfortable a lot of time, Joe. You know, there's a lot of times when you don't get, you know, it's part of army life, like, you know, you you know, the lads out there, like, are well trained, and you know, they're doing, you know, they're used to all that,
I know they have the MOAGs, and I know they have armaments and the heavy machine guns, but they don't have an Iron Dome, like, when it's missiles that are flying at the minute from both sides. They've no protection against them.
Well, they haven't, Joe. No more than the civilians of South Lebanon, tragically. No, they haven't, no. So, you know, it goes higher then, you know. Do you withdraw them or what, you know?
Well, what do you think, Alan?
Well, I can only speak from a soldier point of view.
Yeah, hear, yes, please do.
Yeah, and me, definitely, for the morale of our troops and the good being of the Irish Defence Force, no, definitely, like. Because we've been serving out there under every kind of duress since 1978, and just, you know, and went through a lot of invasions.
Not as horrific as this.
Disagree with that. No, there was plenty of.
No, but in terms of war leaders, Keir Starmer saying, yes, they were on the brink. War leaders saying we're on the edge. Newspapers with apocalyptic countdowns, Armageddon countdowns, clocks on their fronts. But you think they should stay?
From a soldiering point of view, definitely.
Okay, yes. Stay with us, Alan.
Rose,
good afternoon, and I know, rightly so, your name is changed. Your partner is in the Lebanon now.
Yeah.
Well, Rose, I'm thinking of you, and I wish you and your family well, and thank you and your family for the service that your family are rendering to the Irish people and indeed peace worldwide. Have you been talking to him, Rose?
Very far and in between.
Okay.
A lot of hours in between, and I kind of think that's where a lot of anxieties are coming from, is obviously their station is down in the bunkers and has been for, you know, over the last kind of week to 10 days with the escalation of things. That's kind of where they've been mainly the last, you know, couple of days, and that's, I think, where a lot of the fear is coming from, is, you know, it's hours on end before you'd hear from them. Now, I know we're very lucky in this day and age to be able to have that communication.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if it wasn't a situation that was going on at the minute, I think it would be very understandable. Yeah. But as of right now, it's not. And I don't feel that the Defence Forces have had enough communications with the families, considering the increased risk. And I just don't think that there's been many thoughts about kind of mental health at home and over there. I mean, I know they're, you know, trained physically, but mentally, I don't think, with the change in, obviously, circumstances to previous trips, I really don't feel that there has been the importance of keeping them mentally stable as well as physically. It's been tough, I think, for both parts, and kind of like what to say to somebody who's in that situation. You know, you're so far away, you feel so helpless, and they're going, well, what's been said in the news at home, because we don't know. You know, they only know what's going on between themselves, and they don't see what's going on from the outside, and I find sometimes the views can be very different.
And Rose, has your partner done previous tours in the Lebanon?
No, this would be his first time, but he has been active within the Defence Forces for very many years.
Okay.
And it was something that he, you know, has always wanted to do. He's been, you know, Army man since day one, and I feel like the expectations versus reality have really kind of, you know, I'm sad for him that this is the experience he's getting compared to how others had their experiences. But as equally, I'm kind of, you know, I'm concerned for their safety. I mean,
of course.
You know, you don't really get very many. You get the odd social media posts of, they're all accounted for. But then kind of what you're hearing through every couple of hours through the phone, it sounds very different to what has been portrayed in social media with the lads and their status and their well-being.
Do you mean it's a much more difficult situation for them than we realise?
I think so. I think both mentally and physically. As I said, the expectations of previous trips, I think that really kind of set a bar, and then the reality of it, and then what's kind of going on now, I think changes a lot. for, you know, what they kind of mentally prepared themselves for, is what I'm trying to say.
And do they describe what, I can just imagine in a bunker, one, it sounds very cramped, it's not comfortable, daylight, you don't see it, you don't know when you're going to get out of it, it's very, very warm, regardless of air conditioning. And after a while,
I mean, they are very positive minded. I mean, from what I've heard, you know, they're keeping each other afloat.
Okay.
But I mean, there's only so many days that they can be in a bunker before it starts to, you know, mentally.
Yes, I want to go out for a bit of air.
I mean, last night it was, we slept on an MDF board.
Yeah.
In the bunker, and you know, and that's not what the peacekeeping is about. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think it's kind of gone beyond that. I mean, my fear, as I said, there was a statement put out from, the IDF calls upon citizens of the following southern Lebanese villages to evacuate immediately.
Okay.
And one of those was the village of Tari, which is 7 minutes away from Camp Shamrock.
Okay. Yeah.
So if civilians have to evacuate 7 minutes away from the town, I mean, does that not invalidate what their mission is, which the mission is strong civil institutions play an important role in preventing conflict from starting and reoccurring. Civilian peace operations help fragile states rebuild institutions. They can't rebuild institutions if they are being, you know,
If there's missiles flying overhead in both sides. Rose,
so they can't do much from a bunker.
Okay.
So I don't see much more point of them sitting there.
Okay, you'd rather they would come home.
I mean, no, it's not ideal, and I'm not naive to the fact that it's not just as simple as picking them up and taking them out. No, it's not. But I do think that maybe if there was more reassurance of, maybe a protocol or whatever. I don't personally feel there's trust in the Defence Forces to keep them safe with what's going on at the minute.
But given that the place is just madness, how can anyone make it on Instagram,
we have families and friends, you know, bring them home. And, like, you know, there's fear everywhere. I mean, I'm sure, as you mentioned earlier, you know, you mentioned Sean Rooney. I mean, I'm sure Sean Rooney's family, that there wasn't definitely as much escalation as there is going on
absolutely
now than there
not,
was
no.
2 years ago when he was there. And I mean, and his family and him put trust in protocols and equipment and, you know, they failed him. So I don't really have much trust that their protocols and their plans that I'm sure for safety reasons they can't share, and that's so understandable. You know, we haven't even had anybody reach out to the families and of these people. I mean, we haven't had any reach out. We've had one email put up on the latest post on social media to email, which, you know, if you want the support, there's an email. So I mean, it's just.
And have you been Rose? Have you a network or a WhatsApp group with other army relatives of?
No, do you know what? And I'm not in one, but I was thinking of maybe, you know, just for more so people to be leaning on people,
reassure each other.
Stay
with
us. Because they're having. I personally feel like the Defence Forces should have done that. They should have had an allocated person who is dedicated to maybe just a WhatsApp group, and that can give that personal touch of, look, they're fine. Here's what to say to them to make them feel better. Because, I mean, I've never been in this situation before, and I'm sure anybody who has served over before, it is different for them this time. So, you know, what can we say to make them feel better? Because there's only so much you can say.
Well, Rose, stay with us, because I have, and I want you to talk to her and her to you after this break. She has two sons out in Lebanon. They're probably your partner, and they probably know each other. And I'll talk to her after this break. It's joe@rte.ie. 51551 is our text number. And as you can hear, we're talking to families and relatives who have relatives in that bunker where we're told they're bunkered down in South Lebanon, and it is not, they're not under immediate threat by either side, but the problem is these accidents that happen, as they're called, when these missiles are flying, and they're flying in both directions. Stay with us, Rose. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is the text number.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie 51551. Sinead McCauley. Sinead, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
And thank you and your family for your service. And you've, who belongs to you is in the Lebanon at the minute, Sinead?
Both of my sons. I've only two sons and both of them are deployed to Lebanon at the moment, but one of them was on leave. And he was due to go back, but just a couple of hours before he was due to fly back, he got a text to say to stay put, because the activity got worse over there. And so him, along with about 70 other guys who were on leave, guys and girls,
who
were on leave, are currently, there are other people that were they were supposed to swap with them. And those people, I don't know how many of them there are exactly, but daddies and mummies and daughters, sisters, whatever it is, were supposed to come home and they're stuck out there. Now, I obviously am naturally glad that my son is still at home. One of them is still at home. But he's on standby as soon as they have a an option to get them in there somehow, that they're actually supposed to go back. But I don't want them to go back.
Do you not know? Why not?
Because it's extremely dangerous at the moment. Joe, look, I'm not. Both my sons come from a military background. Their dad and their granddad were both. Like, one of them was a captain in the army, and the other one was a colonel in the army. So it's in the blood.
Yeah.
My two sons are soldiers, and they. I completely understand the realities. You know, we all, as army families, as a Defence Force family, we know the risks that they face when they go into any place as a peacekeeper. Naturally,
Of course.
But this is different. This is different this time. It's not like it was before. I have been there, actually. I can't truthfully remember the name of the war that broke out. Was it the Gulf War, the Iraq War? But in 97, 98, I was there for a year because my ex-husband was there as a as a UN peacekeeper. So I've lived in Israel and Lebanon, and I know, I've been in Camp Shamrock. I know exactly what it's like. I've been there, and this is different. It's not the same. All of the soldiers and Defence Force personnel that are out there at the moment, their job and their remit is to naturally keep the peace. Mm-hmm. And all the way up to the Litani River, that's their zone. Like, you've got the blue line and then you've got this zone. And their job is to keep the peace and to report any activity where there's weapons being used, because there's not supposed to be any. But as we all know, since October 6th last year, you know, that the, you know, which was horrendous, of course, you know, that there has been activity. But that increasingly, like, obviously I was nervous when both my sons went out there in May. The two of them went out together. And bit by bit, over the last few months, this has been getting worse. And all of us as families are getting stressed and nervous, you know, about it. But in the last week or two, it is just, we can all see it in the news. It's just gone crazy, literally ballistic. I mean, there you go. It is literally ballistic, because you have got ballistic missiles coming in from Iran. Yeah. So we don't know what's going to happen next. So the job of the UN personnel, like our, my sons, for example, are to monitor the area. They're not meant to actually shoot at people, and they're supposed to work with the Lebanese army, actually. Mm-hmm. But because Hezbollah are fighting, look, and I don't want to get into the whole technical side of it, but I want to talk as a mother and say to you, and I'm in a group chat, actually, with a load of women, and they're amazing. And they are, we're all scared one minute and we're cracking silly jokes another minute, you know, and we're keeping each other sane, mostly, but not really. At the same time, like, we're really scared. So I know that the purpose of your show is to say, like, should they come home? Well, I don't understand. And I've written...
It's just to hear, the purpose of this show, as far as I'm concerned, is to hear real people who have got real. It's not a columnist and historians or whatever, journalists. Exactly. It's people who were directly affected, like you and your family. So you think that they should come home because they cannot fulfil their mandate?
Absolutely. I do. Look, and I know, God, my sons are probably saying, geez, Mom, what the hell are you doing on this show? But I feel I have to do something because they're not able to perform their duties.
Yeah.
We don't know. I have written, we also have, just because I heard the other lady speaking there.
Rose, yeah.
We do have, there are liaison officers assigned to family members that,
okay,
you know, you can reach out to just for anybody that might not know that.
Yeah, okay.
If you contact whatever barracks you're coming from, you know, there is a liaison officer and they will. And I've messaged the liaison officer and I've said to him, you know, and it was a big long message, but it was given all these things, like, why are they still staying there? And ultimately, it's up to the United Nations. I don't think it's really up to even Micheál Martin. I mean, obviously, he has sway with United Nations as the Minister of Defence in this country, but still, we want to write to him. We want to reach out and go, look, these are our sons and our daughters, our husbands and wives, family members that are out here. And it's different if they're out there doing their job. They're not. They're in bunkers a lot of the time. And I heard the other guy on, who was a soldier before. And as I said, I've been there when it has been difficult myself. I've been in Camp Shamrock, Nakura, all those places. Mm-hmm. And it's not like it was. There are hardly any civilians. They're sending. Hardly any civilians anyway. So the civilians are gone. And any that are remaining are being pushed beyond the Litani River. So what are they doing there? Now, at the same time, and the information that I get back was, it's safer for them to be there at the minute. So that I completely understand. But what I would like as a mummy, what I want is, I want somebody to say to me, okay, we aim for this. You know, this is, you know, this is, if I what I, my question was, like, at what point does it become bad enough? That's my question. At what point?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're at an outpost and there's tanks around it and the Hezbollah are going to shoot at those tanks beside Irish soldiers, you know, the Israelis, and they're saying, their gripe, if you like, is that the Hezbollah are hiding behind human shields. But if the Israelis are coming close to the camps or outposts, and what are Hezbollah going to be targeting? So that's dangerous. That's not what they're there to do.
But Sinead, do you think, and I go back to Jadaville, which I know you've read about, there seems to be this, I don't know if it's still extant in the Irish Army, that if we withdrew from the Lebanon or from the UNIFIL, it would be an act of cowardice, of surrender.
Absolutely, and that's why, as I said to you, my sons would be saying to me, Mommy, geez, would you shut up? You shouldn't be saying this stuff on air. You know, but I'm talking as a mommy. I'm not talking as any kind of professional. I'm talking, that's my son. My son's, one of them is there at the minute. I understand he has a job to do, but as I said, if he's not fulfilling a job, anyway, as Micheál Martin said this morning, you can't take one contingent out, so the Irish Army just can't come out themselves.
I know,
I'm sitting in Turkey at the minute because I wanted a holiday to try and cope with some of this stress because it was to pass some of the time. And like many mummies, probably have mad, crazy thoughts about how we're going to protect our sons. I'm thinking, geez, can we get a helicopter in? Obviously, this is just my crazy mind running wild, and that can't happen. This naturally has to be a United Nations decision. It's not, and it's because it's not just in Camp Shamrock, you've about 370 soldiers. You know, there's not just them, you've got the Polish, and in headquarters. Yeah. There's probably, I don't know how many exactly, but there's probably thousands of people that are, certainly is, yeah, there must be thousands, because the Irish contingency is 370. So across the whole of the Blue Line and across that whole, that buffer zone, you know, there's so many people, so you can't just take one contingency out. But why the heck are the UNIFIL now going, the whole United Nations? Mm. I mean, to be honest with you,
Sinead, I want you to say hello to Rose because she hasn't. Rose, say hello to Sinead. And I won't push either of you into a conversation. But Sinead, is there anything you can say, or vice versa, Rose, that would help each other? What in your WhatsApp group, for example, Sinead? Is there anything, any phrase or anything that someone says that calms you down every now and again about your boy?
Well, I suppose what happens is, you know, the communication between the group. I might not get a text, say, from my son for a while because the Wi-Fi went down. So I think the mast had blown up and there was no Wi-Fi. But they have these eSIMs that they can use so they can text.
Okay.
But they can't always text because they're... So what happens in the group chat is that somebody will say, anybody, any news? For example, I might say something, or one of the other ladies might say something, and then everybody's taking a sigh of relief. Or sometimes you're not taking a sigh of relief. Sometimes it stresses you out.
But you might not have heard anything, but then you'll hear in the group, oh, hang on, my son managed to get a text out 10 minutes ago and he said they're all fine. So that so that brings you 10 minutes closer to. Rose, is there anything that Sinead can say or you can say that can reassure each other? Like, I'm thinking that neither side, we're told, would deliberately target UNIFIL. Neither side would deliberately target.
But look, accidents happen, and I think we're much more hyper aware of, you know, accidents can happen. You know, with the recent events, you know, they're still very wrong. I'm sure his family, you know, still think about it. Like Sean Rooney, like, I mean, that was an accident, but accidents happen. Mm-hmm. And even though they had these protocols and these, you know, equipment and everything in place, accidents still happen, and that couldn't have been foreseen. So, I mean, I think that's, and I know, look, I mean, I could get ahead of a bus tomorrow, and that was an accident, but I feel like it's a lot more, you know, magnified with what's going on, and it's obviously a lot more frightening than me walking, you know, and getting hit by a bus. I think there's a lot more chances of something happening there than here.
Of course. Look at the countless thousands of people who've been killed. Countless thousands.
So I don't know whether it's a trust thing, or it's a, you know, just the fear of what could happen. And as I said, I don't get into the politics of it. This is our first trip over.
That's fine.
At the end of the day, the fear is still there, and I think that everyone's end goal is just to get them home safe. So unless there's, you know, more reassurance from
Say with us, Rose and Sinead, if you can, because I have a caller after who's been in the Lebanon, and he wants to reassure you that he believes your relatives will be safe. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
We're talking to relatives of Irish soldiers based in Lebanon at the minute, and we're told they are bunkered down because the intensity of the fighting near where they are. They're based in South Lebanon, and a number of the villages near them have been, the civilians have been ordered to leave if they haven't already been evacuated by the Israeli army. John Boyle. John, good afternoon.
How are you, Joe?
And I see in the last few minutes the Israeli army, you're saying one of its soldiers, which is no death is worth it. One of its soldiers has been killed in combat in the Lebanon, making that its first loss since its forces crossed the border to target Hezbollah. That's their statement. John, you were in the Lebanon. Insofar as you know, has it ever been as dangerous as Sinead, whose son is out there? She had two boys out there. One of them is home. Has it ever been as dangerous as this?
At the start, Joe, it was very dangerous. There was no protocols or anything like that, because we didn't know what we were going into.
Okay.
Right. And when the Israelis invaded in 82, they overran, they were at Beirut in 48 hours, 72 hours. And I can't see Hezbollah stopping them this time. The IDF will not target UN positions.
Okay. And just reassure our two family members why you believe that.
When we were there, the Israeli tanks came up alongside the positions and told all UN personnel to stay within the confines of the camp and they wouldn't be harmed.
What about accidents?
When the Israelis go through Tibnin, which they will do in the next 48 to 72 hours.
Do you think so? Camp Shamrock,
When they go through past Camp Shamrock and they go through Tibnin and they push on, there's going to be innocent women and children with no homes, with no food, with nothing. And we are there as an observer as well as a peacekeeping force. Now, we can't do peacekeeping at the minute, but we can still do the observing part of it.
But can we feed and protect those women and children?
There's no one else in there, Joe. And you've no chance, once this started, you've no chance of getting anybody else in there. Now, the UN camps will have their own rations, and they will have their own. They will have their own rations, as we did, and we were able to feed children and feed women at that time.
And as we know, when a lot of the Irish medical personnel, soldiers, army, they were actually, because the things were relatively peaceful, they could look after a lot of the villagers' medical needs, which is brilliant, absolutely brilliant. But that can't, that can happen now, nothing.
Not until the Israelis got past the Tibnin. When the Israelis got past Tibnin, Joe, they'd be pushing Hezbollah back towards the north of Lebanon. Once they go through, there's going to be people needing medical aid and.
But that's not our mandate.
There's still going to be people needing help.
Well, I know that. Good God. Good God. Now, for many decades.
I'm very sorry about the chap that died and all that, but they say that accidents happen. Accidents happen here in Ireland, Joe, during the training.
Yeah, but
numerous accidents in foreign ranges and whatnot.
John, my point is, schools aren't being blown up here by accident. As I said, happens in Gaza. You know what I mean? If something, God forbid, happens, but if something happens, our Irish personnel, either side would say, it was an accident, we didn't mean it, or...
It doesn't bring
anyone back to life.
No, but the UN will have contingency plans to get the whole UN mission out of there. They will have contingency plans for that.
Okay.
Now, I don't know what they are, but they will have them.
So, John, what do you think, finally, what do you think, should the Irish troops be withdrawn? Should the UNIFIL...
Not yet.
I think
they should stay... I think they should stay and then reevaluate in 72 hours or thereabouts.
Okay, but you reckon a decision has to be imminent. What would you say? Rose is there, John, and Sinead is there, both of them have close relatives out there at the minute. Is there anything, John, you'd like to or could say to them that might reassure them to Rose or Sinead?
Where the UN are in Camp Shamrock, I know they're in the bunkers. And wherever those bunkers are well built,
okay,
and it would be a complete fluke if something hit a UN camp.
Okay, but even if it hit a bunker, would give a lot of protection.
Yeah, give a lot of protection. But I believe those bunkers are all underground.
Okay,
right. So I believe that they're safe there for the moment. They're actually safer there at the moment than trying to move them out.
Okay, I take your point. Very good point. Yeah.
Yes, no problem. Look, I have complete faith in our soldiers.
Yeah.
I have to let my sons go, even though they're only 22 years of age. I have to trust that they're well trained. You know, so that's our job as family members. We have to trust that they're trained to do the jobs, and we do. We know that we're scared. We are not, and I can tell you this too, if we were pushing to get them to come out and leave a whole lot behind, yes, they would look like cowards. That's not what this is about. For me, what this is about is to try and understand at what point, there are very few people, if any, around Camp Shamrock at the moment, like civilians.
Yeah, and that's great. Pardon?
Rose is agreeing. There are very few civilians
If they're in bunkers, they're not there to help people, which my son, and I can tell you this now, and I think I can speak, well, I don't know, I'm sure a lot of the lads would be the same. They're feeling rubbish at the minute, that they're not able to, that they're trained soldiers and they're sitting in a bunker and they're not able to get out and help civilians, people who are dying. They can't go out and help them because they have to take orders to do whatever it is they have to do. And naturally, I want my son to be safe. Okay. Every mommy does. Every family member.
But then I remember one of the most important things I ever heard about first responders and emergency workers and people who help us, like your relatives, Rose and Sinead, and I'm thinking of firefighters, army, Gardaí, ambulance medics, or whatever. When we're having our worst day, first responders, like our army, like our Gardaí, fire brigade, those I've listed, they have to be having their best day. They have to be fit, they have to be quick, they have to be mobile, they have to be on top of all the training that they've gone through, and that's why they're so brilliant. But let's hope, Rose, and thank you, John, for your reassuring words. Rose, thank you again, and thank your family. Sinead, I hope in the next text group you if you are in touch with anyone in that bunker, would you say to them that without exception, the callers to Liveline are so proud and worried, by the way. I'll put that in for fair, but they are so proud of our soldiers, men and women, in the Lebanon at the minute. And those who pray are praying, and those who hope are hoping, and we are trusting in them and their leadership out there, that they will be safe, and above all, that this horror ends soon. Thank you, Rose. Thank you, Sinead. Thank you, John.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And on the one hand, the calls we're getting about the budget, obviously, given May 21 here on Liveline and the menopause discussion for the 3 weeks, and people talking about HRT and people promoting HRT and debunking all the myths about HRT, and then the conversation moved on to the price of HRT and the cost of HRT, and now this monumental announcement in the budget yesterday that HRT will be free to all women, no means test, free to all women. And the same indeed with the children's allowance, the double payment in November and December, apply to everyone who's entitled to children's allowance. That's everyone with a child. No means test, no discrimination. It's an inclusive collegial payment. And I heard Micheál Martin twice this morning in two different stations push back on this whole thing, when people say, why not find the poorest families in the country and give them the money? And he said, no, child benefit is a universal payment to children, for children, paid through the mother for children, and we don't means test, and we've no probably wouldn't be economically viable to means test it. So they stuck to that and the HRT, and they've abolished the means test. But the traffic we're getting is about carers, and people who've heard the harrowing stories before on Liveline of people who are parents invariably, or siblings, who are in a position where they have to care for children who are different and extraordinarily need extraordinarily help, and indeed adults as well. Well, like I see from the Family Carers Association, they were generally not totally supportive of the budget, but what they do say is the increase in carers allowance income disregard, this is a change in the budget, the increase in carers allowance income disregard for means test goes from 400, in other words, previously if you earned more than 450 you couldn't even apply for the carers allowance, and now they're saying if you earn 625 and under, you can apply. But if you earn over 625, you cannot apply for, if you're a single person. And if the couple are earning more than €1,250 a week, they cannot even apply for a care. So why is there a means test for this incredibly important area and there isn't in others? And people will agree with that there should never be a means test for HRT, and there should never be, a lot of people believe there should not be a means test for child benefit either. Angela Holland. Angela, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And tell us your situation, Angela, please.
I have a daughter here with severe special needs.
Yeah.
And I was getting carers for it, half carers.
Okay.
Up to May, I got a letter to say, because my husband works.
Yeah.
I would be getting cut to €40 a week.
Oh, my God.
And Shannon at home, she's living with us for the last 24 years,
yeah,
which we look after 24 hours a day,
yeah,
7 days a week.
Yeah.
And my husband works,
yeah,
and he comes home from work, and it's another job. Because when I say Shannon is 24 hours a day, she has spastic cerebral palsy,
okay,
she's chronic lung disease, scoliosis, she's blind, she's PEG-fed, yeah, she's on oxygen, multiple seizures day and during the night,
mm-hmm,
and we used to feed her then, and then she's on 20 to 30 medications a day, which all is PEG-fed. So that work all day, and that goes on from 6:30 in the morning till 11 at night. Shannon, her last medication is at 10,
yeah,
so we have to flush her a lot, but she suffers from aspirations, so we can't lie her flat, because if we do, she'll have a chest infection, which turns into a pneumonia, which will end up in the Mater Hospital with her, and she gets really, really sick. I mean, we lost her nearly twice this year. So, and then we're up during the night, myself and my husband turning her, changing positions, and she would often take seizures. So that's the 24-hour care we have here for Shannon. And because my husband works, we're getting penalised for my husband going to work. And another thing the government doesn't know, we're at a handing out 24,000 in the last 2 years on a lift, not a stair lift, because we need a floor lift for Shannon.
Yeah.
And a second-hand van we had to buy last year, because we couldn't afford a new one.
Now, when when I was first contacted by two different people yesterday, Angela, about your situation, did anything change for you? Well, sorry, before yesterday, what were you getting per week from the state to help you with Shannon?
€124.
And then it was reduced to?
Then they contacted me in May when Shannon was in the matter very sick. Yeah. To say my husband had to send in his pay slips and bank statements and blah, blah, blah. And then we sent all them in, and then it was 6 weeks waiting for the letter. And then I got the letter there 2 weeks ago to say that we're over the limit and that I will be getting cut from €124 to €40 a week.
Now that is beyond shocking.
Yeah.
That
and I'm also,
shocking.
Joe, I'm not speaking about my life with a child with 24-hour care. There's families out there doing the same job as me.
The means,
they are doing the same.
Well, I presume, by the way, the means test went up yesterday. It went up from...
Which hopefully now we're back on the track. You know, hopefully, haven't heard...
Okay, so the means, so that you're now between the two.
Hopefully, I should go back on half, which I was getting a half care from the age Shannon was 8, which I understood. My husband did work, but we're getting older. Shannon is getting older. Yeah. Her health is getting a lot weaker.
At best, from yesterday, you'll end up with 124. Is that correct? Well, maybe it'll go up to 136 with the extra €12. But that's what you'll end up with at best.
Oh, that's it, because that's because Sean works and it's half carers. I knew that, but that's what it's been like.
But there's 168 hours in a week, 24/7.
I know.
And the state are saying, that they cut you back to 40, which is beyond shameful. And they're now saying after this, what were the phrases in the paper? The jackpot budget, the bonanza budget, the $10 billion or the €10 billion man. The government is saying after yesterday's budget, you will hopefully be under the threshold.
Go back to the half carers.
But at best, you'll go to 124.
That's it. Which I've been guessing. Going along, my husband does work, so half carers. But at the end of the day, the government would need to come and live in our shoes for 24. They wouldn't even last a week, Joe. They wouldn't last 24 hours.
I know.
My husband comes in from work, and another job he takes over with myself and Shannon. And plus, he's to still go to work the next day.
Yeah.
And we have to get lifts in, special vans, special hoisting. Special bathrooms. You do get a grant, but the grant would be nothing to what we'd have to borrow.
Yeah.
For the likes of the floor lift is 18,500.
And
get about 4,000 back off that, which we still have to put 14 to. And last year we had to get a second hand van, which was 15,500.
Yeah.
Like we had to borrow money, in the credit union for all this. Listen, I totally understand that, and I'd say, right, that's it. But do not insult me and say I'm entitled to €40 a week looking after a child here 24 hours a day, not getting a night's sleep. We put her to bed at 11 and we're up, down, up, down, up, down, until the next morning she's to be lifted at 6:30.
So it's just, it's
and
insulting.
I can't even, Angela, I can't even think of what life would be like for Shannon without you. Without
exactly.
your husband, without your family. Shannon, as you said, and please forgive me for saying this again, you detail it earlier. I want to remind listeners that Shannon is 24 years old. She has spastic cerebral palsy, severe epilepsy, chronic lung disease. She's blind. She's peg-fed. She's on oxygen and she's incontinent.
Yeah.
She lives at home in the loving embrace of her
yeah,
family.
Of me and her dad, yeah.
Which I presume in Shannon, dear Shannon, and all that she's suffering, that is the glimmer of hope, the glimmer of light has been surrounded by people who love her so deeply.
Exactly,
so deeply.
Yeah. Shannon wouldn't be here up to this day only for the love and care she's after getting. And both Temple Street Hospital and the Mater Hospital have said that to me so many times because it's the love and care she has at home that we're giving her, which we would do as any parent.
Yeah.
But and a child so sick like this, and because my husband goes out to work, you are penalising from 124 a week down to €40.
Shocking. And we heard on this programme, now it's a year ago, we did it. Every time we do it, we get these people being cut to a fiver a week, Angela.
Yeah,
an insult.
Yeah.
And 40 is an insult. And 124 is an insult. For what you're doing for this
yeah.
world, and what you're doing for this fellow, it's your daughter, sister, but what you're doing for one of us, a fellow
or
human.
Or any carers that's out there that's working around the clock.
Yeah.
And it's called around the clock because we don't get a night's sleep. We don't get, like, we cannot go to bed and say, right, she's settled for the night, we get a sleep. Like, we're up, down, and like that. Some nights, Joe, she takes massive seizures. And when she does take seizures, she vomits everywhere. So we're changing beds during the night. We're changing Shannon. Like, to come on this show today, I had to get my sister up cause to sit with her because Shannon could take seizures any minute of the day. Like, she cannot be left.
So you're
and
you're,
that's what I was so hurt about and so annoyed about.
And the means test for carers has to go. It has to go.
It has to go. I mean, they need, look into people's lives that's doing this job.
Yeah.
Yeah, your husband is getting penalised to go out to work. My husband, he works as a maintenance manager.
Yeah.
That's his job, a maintenance manager.
Stay with us, Angela. But you're clear, means testing needs to go. Paddy Allen, I'll be talking to you after this break. Paddy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Paddy Allen. Paddy, good afternoon. You're listening to Angela Holland about her beautiful, beautiful daughter, Shannon, and the whole thing of the means test for carers allowance. What's your situation, Paddy, with your brother?
Well, I have one left. One passed away last year. Before we get into that, Joe, I have to remind you of something that you said at the outset of the program. The Israelis have already targeted UNIFIL forces. Do you remember when they killed the Irish troops when they drove up in their tank and fired at Point Blank Range?
Yeah.
And they killed our troops. And to add insult to injury, the president of Israel at the time was Irish. He was President Herzog, born in Ireland. Yeah, what about that?
Okay, well, there's 48 Irish soldiers killed out there, as you know. Okay, Paddy, well, tell us the situation that you're in about the carers allowance.
Well, my view on the carers allowance is fairly simple. One, obviously, it's not enough. My heart goes out to that lady who's working 24/7 and her hubby to keep her daughter alive, Angela.
Yeah.
It really does, because, I mean, my situation isn't a patch on what that lady goes through. It simply isn't. But here's the kicker.
Yeah.
Take off the tax off of the carer's payment.
It's taxed.
Didn't you know that, Joe?
No, well, I want to be reminded of it and remind our
listeners. Oh, my dear Joe, let me tell you, my son. Let me tell you.
Yeah, please do.
You're taxed on it. You're taxed on the carer's allowance. Yeah. I get 146 euros a week. And because they're not set up to physically or technically pinch the tax out of that, they take it out of my small private pension from AirCom. So they take 120 a month back after giving me 145 for a 7 day a week, 24/7. That's how they do it.
So
that's how they do it.
So they're saying this is the means testing of the allowance, basically, isn't it? They're taking into account the pension you get, as you said.
Exactly, yeah.
Small pension.
Yeah.
Now, why?
So I don't actually have a tax credit to my name. I've been working since I was 13. I don't literally have a single tax credit to my name.
And you're caring
for... me on everything.
You have your brother 24/7. And I know you'd... Well, I don't know, but I presume... And you
my older brother passed away last year. I was carer now for the last 14 years.
Wow.
Tony passed away last year.
And what's daily life like, Paddy?
Well, I'm sitting in Tony's room now. All his stuff is here. Three bachelors, living together all our lives. Tony's stuff is surrounding me. I deal with the grief on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And I deal with people telling me, sure, you're a carer. Aren't you lucky to be able to do it?
Why
don't they tell that lovely lady on the other line that she's lucky to be able to do it? Why don't they tell Angela she's lucky to be able to do it? These people who have never been a carer and possibly never will be.
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of people.
And can you
a lot of people
can you leave?
For carers.
Is it fair? Can I use your brother's name, Paddy?
Terry.
Can Terry be on his own?
No. Not for any length of time.
Yeah.
I'm 5 minutes from Adair Village, right, which where I go shopping, and also fortunately 5 minutes from Croke Village, where my brother Tony is buried.
Yeah.
They have a beautiful graveyard there, so I can go up and visit there a few times a week. That's what I do. That's
Paddy,
my outing.
And Paddy, for you, and you're describing there were three brothers, three bachelors, one of them passed, and one is still with you. What is it like for you?
Well, on a daily basis, right, you get up, you do the usual, the cooking, the cleaning, the shopping, check the meds. I have to get more meds today, make sure he gets his meds. Terry has he's had several strokes.
Yeah.
He had heart surgery and he had several strokes. I've had four strokes, but I'm still here.
You've had four strokes, yeah.
And I'm not out. I'm still here.
Yeah.
Still here, but such is life.
I'm told now, we've had a long statement from the Department of Social Protection. There's been enough publicity, Minister, for all the positives you did in the budget. That's fine. Extended carers, benefit to self-employed, double carers payment. I'll be here till 4 o'clock. 400 carers. We know all this, but the Minister...
Here's the reality, Joe.
People who are carers, Minister, are still entitled to have their say. I'm sorry, they are. Without me being forced or being told by the department or whatever to read out this. People can read in every newspaper today the increases for carers. I acknowledge them. But people have a right to be heard in their situation, like Paddy, like Angela. And Paddy, you're saying it's lonely for you. Paddy gone? Gone off the line, okay. Angela, I know you said it yesterday, you were outside the threshold when two people approached me and today you're inside, but still the increase will be modest. The increase will be modest. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
I'm back again, Joe.
Paddy, sorry.
The
government are very conscious now. They're very upset. They're saying we have to point this out. As part of Budget 2025, extended carers benefit to the self-employed, double carers payments October and December. So it's double carers means-tested payments will be made in October. That doesn't apply to children's allowance or anything else. Hang on, government, Minister Humphrey, say this in your statement and be totally truthful. Double carers, means-tested payments will be made in October and December. But we know they did things, and now they have me rattled, unfortunately. But let people speak and let people be heard. And Paddy, I said it when you referred earlier. I said it at the start of the program. Paddy, thank you for what you're doing, but please keep in touch about different when different issues come up in the situation you're in with Terry. Please, I ask you to keep
in
touch.
Can I get in
briefly? I'm nearly, it's 59:50. Briefly, Paddy. Briefly.
Last year, Tony died, right?
Yeah.
They reduced the money down to 146. Yeah. They also told me that for the time he was in hospital, there would be no carer's allowance for the 2 months he was in hospital. And they told me that they wanted back pension money they had paid him, even though I informed them when he died.
Paddy.
They wanted that back.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for
that's
reminding me.
That's the way it goes in Ireland.
Yeah, Paddy, thanks indeed. Paddy Allen, Angela Holland, please keep in touch as well. joe@rt.ie continues 24/7, 365. Shannon Gorman produced. Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover our new autumn collection with fresh designs and cosy colours. In store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.